Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, June 13th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from the Urological Institute of Community Care Physicians, a team of four uro-oncologists with 75 years of combined experience providing advanced robotic surgery for kidney, bladder, and prostate cancer. Urologyoncology.com. In the studio today for Medical Monday is Dr. Earl Zimmerman, Director of the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Medical Center. He's the go-to guy on Alzheimer's in our area. He's here to talk about Alzheimer's, dementia, and related neurological disorders of aging. Get your calls in 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also go to WMC.org and check in outline right online. Okay, so here's the news. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. We're joined today by a great friend of the station, one of the top men in the country on Alzheimer's disease, Dr. Earl Zimmerman, who is director of Albany Med's renowned Alzheimer's Center. He specializes in Alzheimer's disease and dementia and is one of the region's top experts, as I have said, on the neurological disorders of aging. Dr. Zimmerman earned his medical degree from the University of Pennsylvania, received his clinical and research training at Columbia. He's board certified in internal medicine and neurology, and his research interests include new diagnostic methods and treatments for Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. Dr. Zimmerman, thank you for being here. You're a great WAMCer, and we love having you here.
Great to be here, Alan.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, what's new? So what's new? Every day I'm reading something in the paper about Alzheimer's. And then in some cases, you never hear about it again. So there are some of the, every once in a while, I remember once when they said MS was caused by little dogs transmitting the disease. We never heard about that one again either. So now the whole idea is to diagnose early so that we can use whatever medicines, right, we have in order to do things.
Correct. Right. So the field keeps moving earlier and earlier. Yeah. So the big push now is to try to diagnose disease pre-clinical Alzheimer's, which is called mild cognitive impairment. These are people who have a little memory trouble, but do everything. All their activities, their daily living are normal. When tested, their memory's not quite what it should be for their age and education.
Right.
And there are other tests you can do on these people, but basically this group of people are usually pre-Alzheimer's. Not always, but usually. And so in about 15% a year, each person in that group will have a tendency to move on to Alzheimer's disease. So we're looking for ways to stop progression. And so far, the best thing is aerobic exercise.
Aerobic exercise.
Aerobic exercise.
And you already complimented me for my 7 day a week hour on either the bike or walking.
Double duty there because I recommend 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
So let me ask you this. What is the best aerobic exercise? I have two. When I'm in Great Barrington, I walk for 4 miles and I walk fast. When I'm at home, and it's raining outside, or when I'm here and it's raining, I ride a bike, a bicycle swim for an hour. Which of those is a better exercise?
Well, probably the bike.
Really?
Well, I don't know how aerobic your walking is.
I'm going fast.
Yeah, fast. And yeah. Do you carry weights when you do that?
No, but I'm going, I think it says, I have this little lady who pops into my ear. And she tells me how fast I'm walking. Mm. So she said, you did that mile, you know, you're working 16 minutes a mile. That's pretty good, I think, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm not an expert
in
walking.
That's right.
So.
I'm not either. But I think it's pretty good. So anyway.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Some days it's a little slower, 17. Some days when I'm really hot, 15.
Right.
So 15 something, point something. Okay. So exercise is number one. Now listen, all you people who love this program. Get out there and exercise. Now, so exercise is one thing. What else you got besides exercise that's preventative?
Well, there's some weak data. There's a little data on vitamins. There was a study in Oxford, England, B6, B12, and folic acid.
Good. I take that.
And so I usually recommend that as something to do. We would like something more powerful.
I don't know. I talked to a doctor the other day, and I said, I'm taking B12, and he said to me, it's the medicine of hypochondriacs, which sort of fits me, so I didn't take
it. There's actually research on this, so I think it's pretty solid.
Pretty solid about the B12, right?
Yeah.
How much?
Well, in the study, it was only 500 micrograms.
Wow.
And the B6 was 25 milligrams, and the folic acid was 800 milligrams.
What about the D3?
D3 is important apparently in preventing Alzheimer's.
Really?
Once you have it, I don't think it's been shown to make much difference, but preventing it is pretty good data.
Okay, let's take some calls, if it's okay with you, Earl. We'll go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, you're on.
I'd like to preface the question with a short story about Muhammad Ali. In 1966, the trial of a white gas station owner who had blown away a member of SNCC, Student Nonviolating Coordinating Committee, came up in Montgomery, Alabama. And he was let off scot-free. Yeah. The kids from Tuskegee went down and tore the town apart. It looked like a tornado hit. Muhammad Ali was scheduled to give a speech at the college. And after the speech, we started to walk back across the campus. And he tried to get into the downstairs portion of the student union, which was locked. And all the football players followed him down and tried to take a poke at him. And he came back up. There's the only Caucasian kid standing there, so he came over and took hands with me.
Wow. That's nice. Hey, is there anything, Jim? Jim, is there anything specific that Dr. Zimmerman, our guest, can answer here?
How does Parkinson's disease affect the nervous system?
That's another program. And it will take a long time because the question is, how does Parkinson's disease affect the nervous system? And while our guest is Jim is a neurologist, I think we'll pass over this one today. We appreciate your call very much. Okay. So now, in order to hang up, I got to press this thing. Where? Hang up. Okay. So you're gone. That's good. Okay. Let's go to. We have a new system, folks, so bear with us. Bill in Gloversville. Bill, you're on.
Doctors, good afternoon.
Yep.
Approximately 44 years ago, I was attending the School of Human Ecology at Cornell University, and they were propounding the belief that there was a concept called terminal drop, which is a significant decline in your higher cognitive faculties 5 years before you die. Is this still true or not?
Good question. Okay, Doc, you're on.
Never heard of it.
He never heard of it. I can tell you this much. I'm very interested in what he had to say a little earlier there, about the fact that people who begin to lose it eventually lose it a lot.
Yeah, but the course of Alzheimer's is 10 years, not 5 years.
You know, when you apply for insurance, so that later on in life, if you need to go to a home or something, they'll pay for it, the insurance company. They always give you a test, and they give you a number of things, and then you have to remember those things. I don't think I did too well on that, so I guess I'm doomed.
Me neither.
Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We got one person on the line. If you have a question about Alzheimer's you've always wanted to ask, we have the guy, Earl Zimmerman, the expert, with us today. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay, we'll go to Kathy, who is somewhere. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. This is not specifically about Alzheimer's, but I think it is related. I'm wondering if you're seeing an increase in encephalitis.
No. Well, what, as a cause of Alzheimer's? Or just encephalitis in general?
Encephalitis in general, with my husband, who ended up with a frontal lobe brain damage, and as a result, has been thrown into what I would call early dementia.
Did he have encephalitis?
He had encephalitis, and he was in a coma. They got him out of the coma. He's been the brain is swelling, and he's had to have his brain drained. So it's had a tremendous effect. He can no longer walk.
Did they find the cause?
No. No one has ever found the cause. They tested him for everything, but there's never been, and he was never been sick. He was stricken with sort of like a stomach bug, and he went into a coma.
And he came out of the coma after a while?
He did. He was in the coma for quite a while. He was in upstate.
Did they find anything in the spinal fluid? Do you know?
They tested the spinal fluid. One of the things they did find was the herpes simplex virus.
Oh, that's not a good thing.
Why is that?
Herpes and simplex encephalitis is very bad and damages the brain. So that's that was a cause. Mm-hmm. And that you have to catch very early and treat it with acyclovir within the first week, really. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, okay. I appreciate. Yeah, I just wondered if there's any more known causes of encephalitis.
Well, there are lots of new things on that in that line, and the autoimmune encephalopathies are very interesting. They're related to cancer. Some are not, and that's a whole new field. And we spent a lot of time on that.
Okay, listen, we got to let you go because we got to take a break. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it. It's a very interesting call. All right, we're going to take a short break, Zachary, and then we'll come right back.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, building community through shared experiences in nature, history, and the arts. The Ashokan Center in the Catskill Mountains, where nature inspires. AshokanCenter.org. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, proudly introducing the gastroenterologist specialist of Litauer, working to provide patients with comfort during colonoscopy procedures, NLH.org. Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, where the 20-acre campus becomes a living laboratory for learning in all grades, pre-K through 9th grade. A good beginning never ends, pinecobble.org. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses including Devil, LaFont, and Pro Design, progressive lenses from Verilux and Nikon, and Maui Jim, Costa, and Ray-Ban sunglasses. S-H-E-E-H-Y Opticians.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, offering a Master of Social Work degree. Open house Thursday, July 7th at 6 p.m. in Poughkeepsie. Adelphi.edu for more information. And from Ballston Spa Veterinary Clinic, dedicated to serving clients and their pets of Saratoga County and beyond. For over 80 years, open 7 days a week with extended hours, BalstonSpaVet.com.
Hey, we're back, okay, with Dr. Earl Zimmerman, neurologist and the go-to guy on Alzheimer's in our area. You just got a big honor. You've become a center of excellence at Albany Med.
Yes, 10 counties.
10 counties?
Yeah.
Wow, they come from... So what's the furthest county?
The furthest county is... probably Fulton or Delaware.
Yeah. Well, and so anybody... So the center of excellence, and what does that mean?
Well, it means that we're one of 10 centers across the state, and these centers are... geared to help get early diagnosis,
right.
Help the primary care doctors make a diagnosis, and we're also act a referral center for them if they want further workup.
So did some money come with this?
Yeah, lots of money.
How much?
Good money. So it's a 5-year grant, $2.5 million.
Wow. Okay. But if somebody is listening to this in Delaware County right now and wants to come up to Albany Med to get evaluated or whatever else, how do they do it? Do they ask their doctor to call or what?
We like to work with the primary care doctors,
right,
to get them to refer. And our goal is to help them make an early diagnosis also without spending a whole lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and how many people do you have working for you, Earl?
about six of us in there.
That's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. Okay, so let's go to Gina in Goshen. Okay, Gina in Goshen, you are on. Hey, Gina.
Hi there. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. So my mom has vascular dementia slash Alzheimer's, and I'm really worried about it myself. It causes me a lot of anxiety. When do you recommend I get that early intervention, the testing that you recommended in the program? And A and B, is that a routine test? Like, I can just ask my PCP, hey, I'd like to get some early intervention testing, and can you write me a referral?
Sure. So what's the testing?
So in other words,
well,
I guess
the early,
yeah, early Alzheimer's test.
I'm 55. I'm concerned about myself based on what my mom is going through.
She has Alzheimer's too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd like to know. I don't want this test. There's a test out there that people can get to show that they have it or not. But what I'm hearing you guys talk about is that there's the memory testing that can be done, which might show early onset. In
sure.
Which case, I would want to have that medication protocol.
Okay. We got it. Go ahead, Earl.
So the one thing your primary can do is we've been talking about an AD8. It's kind of a screening test, and it's about 1 minute that some caregiver fills this out. That's very good.
AD8?
It's called AD8. It's 8 questions. It's very simple, something for an observer like your spouse fills it out. Secondly, probably the most sensitive test we have is called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, the MoCA, and it takes about 25 minutes. And most primaries don't admit that. You'd have to come see us, so you can get your primary to refer you to us, and we'll be happy to evaluate you. Sometimes we do an MRI scan too, if there's some hint. Sometimes that's helpful. We can see some changes. So we have an evaluation process. It takes about an hour.
And I'm assuming, Earl and Gina, that one of the problems is that some people, you know, who suspect they have it, don't want to know it. And if they don't want to know it, you know, because it makes them uncomfortable, that violates your protocol, which is the earlier you know, the more we can do.
Right. Yes, well, the world's changing. It's not always so. I mean, that's... So the earlier the better, because exercise can help, and we're also now doing drug trials for people who have this really early stage, and they look very promising.
Is that right? Tell us about that, because that's very important.
So over the last 5 years, people are looking at these monoclonal antibodies against amyloid. Amyloid is the amyloid protein.
Yeah, that's what you see in the pictures. Yeah.
It's going to get rid of that from your brain. And we discovered in the last few years that if we studied this earlier— you know, we were all studying Alzheimer's disease. We studied pre-Alzheimer's disease. The preliminary data suggests that you can slow down progression. So now the trials are, you know, full trials, phase 3 trials, trying to get to be able to go to the FDA for approval. And then several of these trials have been in progress about a year. And so in about 3 years, if we're successful, they'll be go to the FDA and get approval and come on the market.
I read a long time ago that the amyloid was the suspect, of course, that's what raised the issue. And that in at least a couple of studies, they were able to get rid of the amyloid, but it didn't mean anything. In other words, the damage was sort of done.
Well, yeah, but those are later cases. That's the point. So you got to go earlier.
Right. Okay, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go now to Kathy in... Seward, New York. All right, Kathy, you're on. Go, Kath.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call. I have always had a bad memory since I was a kid. Like in school, when it came to memorizing things like periodic tables or dates in history, I was always very bad at that.
Me too.
While I was pretty good at figuring things out, you know, like mathematical problems and stuff. Does that affect these early tests that one might get? I mean, if you're already predisposed to be sort of forgetful, if you will, you know, how would an early Alzheimer's type test, you know, separate, you know, your general, you know, inadequacy in memorization from something that is now, you know, bordering on a disease?
Well, one of the questions is, getting worse. Is your short-term memory getting worse in the last couple
of
years?
I see.
So there's a change in the memory. Secondly, we test more than just memory when we do these tests. So we test parietal function, which is how things are in space, and that's a common early finding in Alzheimer's disease. And so
what do you mean how are things in space? I don't get it.
Finding something right in front of you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that's surprisingly early stage. So. Sometimes it's frontal behavior, but usually it's a parietal involvement. It's very interesting. So there are other things on the testing, you know, that could give us a hint that you had the pattern for that.
But I love her question, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I was with a bunch of smart kids on the west side of Manhattan, and they could look at a book, and they could get 100 on the test. And I had to really study. And I always wondered whether it was the paint chips that were around on our windowsill that may have made the difference.
I think there are some people who are better at remembering and other people better at executive function or engineering function and so forth.
Interesting.
So our brains are different.
Yeah.
Some people can never, one of the things you do is draw intersecting pentagons as part of the testing. And some people just can't do that and never could, but it's part of the Alzheimer's test also.
Yeah, but I loved your question, Kathy.
I call this manufactured defects.
I have a part B, and that is, how do you discern between Alzheimer's and some other form of dementia? And then I'll hang up and listen, okay?
No, not hang up.
That's a good question.
Don't hang up.
That's what they do every day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Alzheimer's by far, 75% of people with dementia of aging is Alzheimer's disease. But then there's another group that has frontotemporal disease, another group that has Lewy body disease, and so there are other different kinds of, and so they have different presentations and different patterns and different testing.
In the end, does it make a difference? In other words, if you
well, it does make a difference because if you give a frontotemporal person with frontotemporal disease, Aricept, they're going to make them worse.
Oh, I see.
You know, and in the future, that'll be a big difference because to give monoclonal antibodies to amyloid to somebody who doesn't have amyloid.
Wow. Well, listen, is that part B, Kathy? Are you all done? Yes, you're done.
One more part, B.1. Do these different styles of dementia and Alzheimer's, they show up differently on the MRIs?
They may, yes. May or may not.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. I think that's it. I'm working with this new system. I'm not sure of myself yet. Okay. Now we're going to go to Jim in Saratoga Springs. All right. Jim, you're on.
Hi, doctors. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am 51 years old, and I'm pretty much at the top of my professional career. I'm a technologist, and I'm able to figure out lots of technical problems and stuff like that. But I have been noticing that certain things are that I should be remembering, like people's names that I've known for years. Suddenly, I have to really try hard to remember their name, and it'll take me, almost a minute to come up with, a name, for example. Now, I went to the doctor recently and for an unrelated issue. And while I was there, I asked him, I told him about this, and he said, okay, draw a clock on a piece of paper and put the hands at 10 after 11, and then, let's see how you do that. And so I performed that function fairly straightforward. And his thought was after that, I'm pretty young, and I did that test, pretty well. Without issue, and so I really shouldn't be too worried about it at this point. I want to know, should I feel comfortable with that, at least in the short term, or should I look into it a little bit further? I do want to, after listening to your program, of course, I do want to catch any potential problem as soon as possible. And also, as a part B to this, is there blood tests or any kind of non-interactive tests that could be done to detect a potential problem as well.
Okay, for the last comment is the Holy Grail right now. We would love to have a blood test. A lot of people are working on a blood test. We've been working on blood tests. So far, it hasn't come yet into the clinical realm as a reliable way to test it. We're hoping it will, but right now there isn't a reliable blood test.
There's something on the interweb this morning.
Yes, I looked at that.
A place called Rowan University. Yeah. Has announced the development of a blood test. So
right.
We don't know. But of course, as you
but
say,
but
it
hasn't been field tested yet. No. It hasn't been validated.
Sure.
But as you know, there are a lot of things promising like that, and they're still under study.
Right.
So let me go back to your first question. So it's been said for years that forgetting names in middle age, I guess I'll call you middle aged, is a normal phenomenon. I don't know, not so sure anymore, but. I think the clock test is that visual spatial thing I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do intersecting pentagons. Some people draw a clock, put the numbers in, and put the hands at 10 after 11. And that's, again, that's that visual spatial. This is not memory function. That's parietal lobe function. But is a very good test for early Alzheimer's. So I commend your doctor for doing that. And I think overall you're probably doing fine. Do you have any other problems in your functioning?
I have, gastric, my stomach, I've had issues, and I haven't seen a doctor in like 2 years.
Yeah, well, that's not my department. I got above the neck.
Right.
It's not my department.
I think that, like I said, as far as solving puzzles and latest technology and getting my hands into things like that, I'm pretty sharp. I'm right at the top of my career. So.
Well, that sounds great.
I don't think there's any other issue.
You're doing all right.
That sounds great. Luke, I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Now we'll go to, let's see, I'm trying to figure this whole new thing out. Let's go to Mike in Richmond, Virginia. I think it says Richmond, Virginia. Okay, Mike, you're on. Hello? Hello? It says in use elsewhere. I wonder what that means, in use elsewhere. Okay. Well, then obviously Mike is not our next guest. We'll go to Philip in Amsterdam. Okay. Philip in Amsterdam, you're on. Uh-oh, something's really wrong here. See, there's something is fouled up beyond all recognition. So I'm not sure what this is. I know somebody from our cracked engineering department will be with us very shortly, in which case I will ask you a personal question. I know a set of twins somewhere. One of them has Alzheimer's. The other does not. But I always thought the last time you were here, we were talking about predictability. If you have a direct relative who has Alzheimer's, your chances go up something like 50%, right?
Well, in general, unless you have a family history of like three generations, about half the people have Alzheimer's disease, that's a dominant gene. That only accounts for about 1% of Alzheimer's disease, so that's pretty rare, and those genes are known, though. But in general, if you have a father, mother, sister, brother, a primary family member that has Alzheimer's disease, your lifetime risk is 30% versus 10%, so it's a risk. But now with a twin, that's an interesting situation. So, your exact twin should have the same gene defect, and yet a lot of people who are twins don't. One twin gets it, the other doesn't. But the risk is much higher, obviously
sure.
than 50%. But it's not absolute. Because I have patients in my practice that have twins. One twin I followed for 10 years didn't change at all. The other twin has Alzheimer's and passed on.
Wow. Okay.
So it's very variable.
Do you die from Alzheimer's?
Oh, yes.
How does that happen? What's the
usually, aspiration pneumonia. So what happens is you begin to lose all your faculties and you get a severe stage of Alzheimer's. You're not walking. You're not talking. And the brain keeps shutting down. And eventually the brainstem poops out, which is where the swelling mechanism is.
Okay. So our wonderful engineer, Jessica, is now with us. Okay. So see, these things said in use elsewhere. We don't know what that means. In other words, he's on the phone. Mm-hmm. But when I tried, that may have been he was still on the phone because, oh, well, anyway, you people out there don't care. We're just trying to beta test this system right now. So we go to the person who's been holding on the longest. So we'll go to Ron on line number one. Okay, Ron, on line number one, you're there?
Yeah, I'd like to ask the doctor, are there any predictive variables? I mean, I understand that if you have a family history, you may be predisposed. But are there other variables like obesity, diabetes, that might yes. indicate that you're, you know, susceptible for Alzheimer's?
Oh, yes.
And the second question is it only an old person age? Oh, any longitudinal studies to discover whether younger people are getting Alzheimer's at an earlier age?
Okay, first question. Lots of risk factors. Very important. Hypertension out of control, diabetes out of control. Very bad for your brain, particularly diabetes out of control. And hypertension, because you get strokes, but also it makes Alzheimer's worse. So be sure to treat the high, those issues because they're preventable and they're really bad for you.
So if you
head injury also is a bad one.
Don't get
head injury and go into coma because that's really an important risk factor.
But have you done tests in which people who have diabetes and who control the diabetes versus the people who don't control it?
There's data on this,
yeah.
Alan. There's very good data on this.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great to know that.
So there was a second question.
Ron. Ron?
Oh, what age do you get it?
I'm sorry. The second question was, is it 100% predominantly an older person's disease, or are we seeing that younger people are getting it?
Well, by and large, it's a disease associated with aging. So the older you get, the more likely you're going to come down with it. So at age 65, it's about 9% of the population. Age 75 is 25% of the population have clinical Alzheimer's disease. And at 85, it's almost 50%.
Wow. Of the whole population?
Of that age group. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really something. Well, we thank you for your call. Thanks very much for doing it. All right. Okay. So we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Support comes from Mabee Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, presenting Revolution, Living History Day, featuring historic reenactors, including militia, cooking, and blacksmith demos, brewers, musicians, artisans, and more. SchenectadyHistorical.org. Bodhi Spa, Yoga, and Salon, Hudson, a full yoga studio offering classes in vinyasa yoga, Pilates, hot yoga, prenatal yoga, and yoga basics. Open daily, BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees, offering daily specials, 518-432-0358. The Brattleboro Retreat, providing hospital-based mental health services, including medically assisted alcohol withdrawal. BrattleboroRetreat.org for information. Ellis Hospital Emergency Department, providing access to emergency care for everything from fever, cough, and flu to sprains, cuts, and chest pain, day or night. Better care starts now. EllisMedicine.org. And from Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, using food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich compost to help conserve water and control weeds. Compost available for purchase, UCRRA.org.
Thank you, Zachary, for bringing us back to reality. We want to do now, our phone system didn't quite work out, our new system, so we'll bring the two people back on line three and four in sequence who got knocked out. So number three is, it says, in use elsewhere again. Huh, are you there? Hello? Well, it's messed up also. Okay, there you are. Number three, I took the number three call, Jess, and I'm told in use elsewhere. Are you there? Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, well, what did we do that was wrong? We're trying to get trained here. I hope you understand, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, I do. And learning a new skill is great for brain development and staving off Alzheimer's.
Absolutely. I think it may be too late. But okay, what's your question?
No.
What's your question?
So I have a couple of questions for Dr. Zimmerman. A great show so far. Excellent topic. In the previous call, you mentioned head trauma as a potential risk factor for development of Alzheimer's disease. My question is, I had a neighbor who died of what they diagnosed as early onset Alzheimer's secondary to falling off of roofs several times. He was in construction. So is that an accurate diagnosis? Is that something that you've seen and heard of?
Yes, well, serious head injuries can predispose you to develop Alzheimer's disease. So it could have played a factor.
Do we know why? Can the amyloids be increased because you fell off?
That's still under study, you know, this whole football thing. Yeah. Some get Alzheimer's.
Yeah, well, that brings up another question that I had related to this, is that, you know, the more we learn about chronic inflammation in the body, we've learned that it's not good. So I would expect if concussive factors are a risk factor for Alzheimer's, we'd see a whole lot more athletes, you know, especially football players, hockey players, develop, quote-unquote, early-onset Alzheimer's at a higher rate than they seem to.
We have. They develop a dementia related to head injury. Sometimes it's, some of the pathology is Alzheimer's. Some of the pathology is just abnormal tau, which is another thing that becomes abnormal in Alzheimer's, but they don't get the amyloid. So it's still under study as to just exactly how the trauma is causing this neurodegenerative process to take off.
Okay.
Great. So early onset Alzheimer's can be genetically linked and also from trauma. Is that your assessment?
Yeah, and also just bad luck, as far as we know. Well, it's a biological system, you know, so there's a belt-shaped curve, and you have people in the middle and people either end.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, now, I did that right, Jess? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to go to number four. And number four is Philip. Philip, are you there?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And thanks for your patience. Appreciate it.
Okay, great. It's sort of interesting that you were just talking about concussion causing a possibility of dementia. I fell on the ice this winter, and I hit really hard, and I went to the ER room and had a CAT scan. And they said that after a while, it was just, my brain was normal. I didn't have any concussion. But then I asked the doctor, I thought about it later, and I said, you know, CAT scans are supposed to be able to detect Alzheimer's. And I was wondering if they said my brain was normal. I was wondering if they, without any preemptive decision to look for Alzheimer's, a CAT scan would really detect it if you had a problem like that.
Well, a CAT scan will detect it once you're well into the disease. But just having had a head injury, it's not going to tell you whether you're prone to Alzheimer's disease. What it might show is it had some bleeding in the brain, you know, or a contusion of the brain. That would be important to see. That was good that you didn't see that. And you were not in a coma, right?
I was fine as far as my consciousness.
Okay, your risk is pretty low. It's probably not terribly significant.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, wait, hold on. I woke up and I said, you know, you're always talking about CAT scans searching for Alzheimer's. And I said, oh, I just had a CAT scan. And I was saying, now would that have be predictive of what I said my brain was normal?
Yeah, you may not have, our phone connection is not very good, but Earl, I think the question is, what's the predictive value of having fallen off the roof, right? I mean, am I wrong about
that? If he didn't have any bleeding in the brain, and if he didn't have loss of consciousness for a period of time, then the risk is pretty small.
Right. Okay, thank you very much. All right, now we're going to go, I'm looking at my new system. It tells you how long somebody's been hanging on. And it looks to me like, no, over here, look. Martha, no. Oh, see, this is eight.
Daniel.
Daniel. Okay, we're gonna go to number six. Daniel, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Jess told me to do it.
My interest is in genetics. I have both a mother and a father who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and I know you addressed genetics somewhat. What I'm wondering is, the determination of that factor, how determining that factor is, as well as the ability to overcome that, has it been shown that you can actually overcome that genetic predisposition?
Well, again, your lifetime risk is 30% versus 10%. So it's not a 50% risk. And then it's not 50-50 that you're going to get Alzheimer's disease, only 30% risk. What to do to overcome it? Don't get old.
But his question is great in that we're making some progress, we hope, so that we're talking about things like gene splicing. Maybe that'll come along and help him out.
Well, if we knew what the gene was, the thing is, we don't know. In sporadic Alzheimer's, we don't know what the gene is.
But we have to find out, don't we? That's your job.
Yeah, well, it's been looked for. It's hard to find because it's probably multifactorial.
Well, if Jonas Salk had said that, we wouldn't have cured polio.
Okay. But it's complicated.
It's complicated.
Lifestyle's important, too.
You are right. Okay, thanks a lot. Right now, we are going to... Now, what is it? How do I know what's next, Jess? Which one would it be? You don't know, right? You'd go to the one that's up there for the longest. That would be Martha on number 7. Martha, thanks for your patience.
Hi, yes. I'm needless to say, worried. I'm 70. My mother had Alzheimer's. And then in 1989, I had a bad head injury, and I was in a car accident, and I was unconscious for 2 days. And my memory is really, I mean, I'm terrible with names now. I forget names that I know, but, you know, I still can operate. And I've also recently heard that sugar is very bad and that it can form, in a reaction in your body, it can form pyruvic acid, which is found in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. And I will say, my most recent C-reactive protein test was below 1, so there wasn't any inflammation. And I do exercise, not as much. I used to run, but my knees aren't the greatest, so I don't do all that much. But I'm just wondering, you know, how much in danger am I of getting this?
I think you should get tested. You should be evaluated for whether you're really a mild cognitive impairment or not, pre-Alzheimer's or not.
Now, what about the sugar? I've heard that using sugar, you're going to have a third diabetes with Alzheimer's. What is the connection there?
I don't know that eating some sugar is going to make a whole lot of difference. Because diabetes is another story. So if you eat a lot of sugar and get diabetes, then that's a problem, because diabetes type 2 is definitely a risk for Alzheimer's disease, and it's not good to have diabetes type 2 out of control. That is, A1C over 7 is predispose you to cognitive decline.
Also, one other question. You know, in your pH, they say that you should be slightly alkaline and that the cells operate better and everything works better. Is that apt to help if you can keep your system slightly alkaline?
I don't believe it.
You don't?
I don't think so. I don't think the sugar story either is kind of the theoretical stuff, but in reality, I don't think it makes much difference.
You've heard it from Earl Zimmerman himself. Thank you very much. We're going to go now to Dee in Albany. All right, Dee, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking the call. I've got a question about my father, who is an 88-year-old. His general practitioner made an early initial diagnosis of dementia of 23 out of a 30 mini mental state, and short-term memory is impacted. He's still early stages, and Aricept has been suggested.
Mm-hmm.
He has a history of cardiac and has a pacemaker, and I heard Aricept slows heartbeat. Is there any concerns that way? And also, does Aricept make somebody lethargic? And how early should somebody take it, or what stages-wise?
Well, he's got a pacemaker, so it won't slow the heart.
That's
not a problem. If you have a pacemaker, the Aricept will not slow the heart. when to start it? It's once they have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. I don't use it for mild cognitive impairment generally because it doesn't really slow progression. It does this helps to maintain some activities of daily living a little bit longer than if you didn't take it. So it's been approved by the FDA. I'm not wild about it. It's not very robust. And has
what does that mean, robust?
Well, it has a very weak effect.
I see.
And it has lots of side effects. So,
and I've heard nausea
yes,
must be taken with food.
Yes, upper
and things
GI
like that.
Problems, diarrhea problems, bad dreams, lots of issues. I have some patients that do very well on it. But
for somebody who's older, it's a question of what would they tolerate or be able handle and whether to take it or not.
Yeah, so that's something that your primary care doctor, your doctor, and the patient and family should decide whether they want to try the risk, try it or not.
Dee, I'm trying to get everybody in. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. So now it looks to me like we got to go to Jill because Jill's been hanging on forever. Jill, you're on.
Hi, doctors. How are you? I have a question that's similar to someone who called in earlier regarding already having a poor memory. I was diagnosed in my 30s with learning disabilities, processing problems that I had pretty much had all my life since childhood. And it includes a memory impairment. It includes processing in that spatial testing that you were mentioning, mm-hmm. you know, whether you can see something that's in front of your face. People used to say if it had been a snake, it would have bitten me. And other parameters that seem to mimic Alzheimer's. I'm almost 60 years old, and it's increasingly getting worse. I did go to a neuropsychologist for testing. Yeah. I don't know exactly what the testing was called, but it was similar to the testing that I had when I was diagnosed with a learning disability,
mm-hmm.
and nothing was found.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but the problem was that the testing did not seem to be, it wasn't realistic. It was, you know, what happens in real life and what happened during the testing in a sterile environment.
Let me ask you a question. Was there any assessment of how you're doing? Are you declining in your abilities?
Yes, I am. What? I mean, I'm still functioning, I'm still working, but my memory is increasingly getting worse. The visual processing is getting worse, uh-huh. and the auditory processing,
right.
which used to be my strength.
So your things you can't do anymore, like you can't remember your appointments, and you have trouble driving a car, and are you developing trouble with your activities, your daily living?
Not to that extent, but it's approaching that level.
My question
basically is how could I know,
okay,
would
if you came
I go
to see
a
me,
neuropsychologist or do I go to a neurologist?
You should see a neurologist or someone who specializes in the treatment of these patients because you need an informant to come and talk and fill us in as to how you're doing. Are you really declining or not in your daily life? That's the key.
Testing is
one thing, but this is a clinical diagnosis, Alzheimer's disease, so the clinician needs to make a diagnosis.
Got to go real fast. Thank you very much, Jill.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay, we only have a minute to go, and so I'm going to call on Dan of Clifton Park. All right. Dan, you have to ask it fast, and Earl, you have to answer it even faster. Go ahead, Dan.
Hello, anybody there?
Yeah. You're here, but you got to go fast.
I'm very active physically, mentally. I edited a magazine. I just published my first book. But, you know, what something you said, like if you're looking for something and you're staring right at it but you don't see it, I find myself daydreaming at the wheel and going by my destination. My memory, short-term memory, is definitely on the downgrade.
You're getting lost
driving?
At
my age, is this completely normal, or what should I do?
What's your age?
How old
91.
Are you?
91.
Are you getting lost driving?
Haven't actually gotten lost yet, no, but I've driven by my destination.
Right. Me too. You should get tested.
Daydreaming.
You need to get tested.
Mm-hmm.
You need to see a neurologist involved in this area.
Okay, listen, thank you. Thanks for calling. I appreciate
it. Okay, thanks for the advice.
Okay. We are out of time. I'm so sorry. The lines were filled. We left them filled with people like Lewis and Martha and Rick and Betsy and Bruce. And in each case, we want to apologize for leaving you on the line. We'll have to have Earl Zimmerman back again. He's terrific, and he's a great friend to this radio station. All right. Support for Medical Monday comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting its fourth annual Lake George Hikeathon, July 5th, featuring 14 sites around Lake George, lakegeorgehikeathon.org for registration. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. He's terrific. And believe me, he's really getting us into this new system. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Yeah, that's right. And so now you want to stay tuned for a news, I'm stalling, news update.